Hello, I'm Joan. I'm a Canadian family physician who also works as a restorative medical educator, facilitator, and coach. I create spaces that rehumanize the work of healthcare. I'm creating this podcast to remind myself, as well as anyone else working in a helping profession, that when you are working and caring for your human patients, you are the other human in the room.
Hello there, healthcare humans. It has been a minute since I have done an episode of The Only Human in the Van. And yet here I am driving on my own to London, Ontario, where I'm going to be giving a keynote style, like a large group version of a workshop that I really love doing. I have a version that's called Restoring Your Time, where I talk about time efficiency, but also sprinkle in the capacity concepts I find so important. And that's the version I'm doing here for a fabulous, much abused and much needed group of healthcare professionals, the clinic managers, the executive directors, the admin behind the scenes that are running our offices. I'm not sure if there's people here that are like running hospitals. I think it's more outpatient clinical based. I guess I'll tell you on the way back if there's more to say. But the reason that I'm recording this is I just had a little thought train bubbling up. And when I have a thought train bubbling up, it's time to record something. That is what I have learned to be true. And it's based on a question. I got it again this morning, but I've gotten it a few times since the episode about healthcare futurism with Zaina Kayat. I do not have her name in front of me. I don't think I just pronounced it right, and apologies for that. Especially this piece of when we hear about even the current state of healthcare and the future of healthcare, and there's talk about AI, and there's talk about splitting up the different components of healthcare and it not necessarily having to be one person who delivers all the healthcare. There's a part of me that's deeply relieved because now I'm not on the hook for everything and my patients could possibly want from me. Thank goodness, because I cannot. I am merely a mere mortal, a singular human being. Thank you very much. But there's also this sense of like, does that mean we just have to give up ideas around like therapeutic relationship, like especially like as a family physician working primary care, like I am drawn to this profession because I love following patients over their lifespan. And I love offering patients sort of this home base that they can know they can come back to no matter what's happening in their care. I think those concepts are not, in my opinion, they are not, it would be a real tragedy if they were lost. And I think actually a lot of when people kind of grieve about how healthcare is already going to the dogs and everything, that's one piece. And probably why then, you know, folks in primary care talk about like, we have to make primary care the medical home and like this sort of thing. And I think just like both things can be true. I think that we can definitely allow pieces of care, we can acknowledge that what is happening is that pieces of care are going to happen hodgepodge all over the system. And we could, there's still benefit and value to offering sort of a home base. And this applies even to specialists and people who have more of a specific niche, like having continuity and relationship building. Even for a very sub specialist who maybe is only going to see a patient once or twice. I think it would be really interesting to pay attention to the value of relationship building, trust building, what that does for even things that we are afraid of, like medical legal risks, etc. What that does for our patient's willingness to trust us and try out what we ask of them. And therefore, that is more effective healthcare, including if they then have the trust and vulnerability and intimacy to say, I will never do what you're asking me to, so let's negotiate what's something I will do, right? Because it can feel so wasteful when even people see like a subspecialist, and the specialist, understandably, they're trying to be efficient, they're going through their list, they have their kind of their protocol of what they offer to the patient. And then the patient comes back to me as a family doctor, and like together we end up not doing anything the specialist said necessarily. Maybe we get a bit of an answer, but we're kind of like, gosh, you know, it was a miss because of things about the patient, whether it's their cultural background, you know, like, are there ways we can get to know each other without having to do more of this time sharing concept that was brought up in that podcast, right? Like, we don't have more time to spend in person or even virtually sharing real time for each other. So the thing I wanted to bring up is something I think about a lot, and I'm kind of living out experientially and experimenting with ways in which I can offer asynchronous relationship with my patients. And so I'm sharing this with you, not so that you can now say, oh, great, I'm not doing any of this. This means I'm a bad doctor or clinician of whichever kind you are. No, I'm not even sure if this is the way that we generally should go. I'm following my instincts of what feels good to me and sort of experimenting and innovating about how to make asynchronous forms of relationship with patients and in ways that feel meaningful both to me and to patients. Because I believe the relationship is a really essential component to what we're doing here. First of all, it's an essential component because it is, it is one of the most satisfying parts, if not honestly the most satisfying part of my job. Like, what are the satisfying parts of my job that bring me the most joy and energy? The relationship and the delight of these human beings who I have the privilege of being their doctors and they are my patients, and just humanity. Humanity! Like, that is like absolutely one of my favorite parts of being a physician and why I would never give it up. Also, I think other satisfying parts, like, you know, when you do get a, you know, you solve the mystery of a diagnosis, like, there's other things too, but I would say this is a core essential ingredient that if it was lost completely, like, I can't imagine still loving the job, you know? And so for that reason, because it's sad, job satisfaction is a very great reason to do something. I notice that it satisfies my patients as well. And that is, first of all, lovely and nice, because it wouldn't it be nice if more of our patients were like happy with their care because like then everyone feels good. And also, like, even bringing it back to me, if my patients feel a sense of connection to me, I am aware there's data that shows that that means they're less likely to sue me, there's less likely to launch a college complaint against me. If I'm able to form and curate pathways of connected conversation and relationship building, that, way more than charting in detail, mitigates my risk of some things that often we fear. So, like, that's an interesting reason to do it, right? I don't know, there's probably more. Is anyone studying this stuff? Like, I don't have any interest in research. No, thank you. But I am hopeful that someone's doing this research. So anyone out there doing research, anyone want to do research about this? I'm curious about it. If it already exists, I hope it does. Yeah, so like those are kind of the reasons I'm experimenting with it, because like I know I don't have capacity and therefore I don't want to spend more time with my patients, like one-on-one real time with my patients. But I do want to offer as much as I can connection to my patients. And can I expand and amplify my impact without having to further compromise my time, energy, capacity, right? So I have at least three sort of different experiments going that are ways in which I do asynchronous care and therefore like asynchronous communication connection with my patients. And I am in no way measuring the impact of that. I think it would be neat to, and I'm not. So one, what are they? Wait, I had them in my head, but I want to make sure they're still in my head. So one is my patient portal. Oh yes. The second one is my like virtual town halls. And the third one is actually just the beginning. Like, I'm recording this in September, but I'm imagining actually I'm going to release it sometime in October, because, like, I already have other podcasts lined up. And if everything goes according to our plan, I will have actually a brand new podcast, like not just a new episode of this podcast, but like a completely different podcast that I am launching with Jamie Lee Finch, who you have heard on this podcast a couple of times. And it is meant to be for not just healthcare professionals. We are imagining that people in healthcare will have an interest in listening, but it is also meant to be for just anyone in a body who's curious about how to understand and care for their body in ways that feel better to them, that feel better than some of what the messaging, both from like kind of the wellness, health and wellness industrial complex offers to them, as well as what like the medical industrial complex offers to them, like that separate them from their body and commodify or objectify their body and make their body a problem. Like, what if you want a different relationship with your body? That's what that podcast is all about. I'm going to talk more about it at the end. But like, that is also an experiment of like something I'm thinking I could potentially offer for patients to be listening to. And that would be a way they could potentially be in connection with me in a different way, right? So those are my three ways. So I just want to like talk through how they work and the impact that I observe just anecdotally on the impact they have on my practice. And again, not as like the new standard to judge yourself by or anything, but just thinking of how thinking this way could be a way that you feel like you can cut back on your real-time appointments or I'm curious how it could even apply to hospital settings. Like, some of these settings I'm not in, so, but like, what if we all thought this way as well? How could we be still offering really beneficial connection without it being a real-time conversation? And not instead of completely, like, real-time conversations will always be a part of what we do and have a different importance and quality for sure. And like, how can those be enhanced by having this asynchronous connection and communication as well, right? And actually, before I go into my three, I want to talk about the ways I observe that this is already happening, like in different industries. So the coaching industry, for sure, like this is very meta, but like right now, like what I am doing through my podcast is amplifying my impact and my ability to connect with people in healthcare, because there's people who listen to this podcast or who will see one of like, you know, the posts or the videos on TikTok or Instagram or LinkedIn or whatever, that will never see me speak live, that will never buy one of my courses, that will never work with me in one of my coaching containers. They won't because maybe they aren't interested in dedicating the finances to that. They won't because they're not interested in dedicating the energy to that. And yet, I am amplifying my impact and my connection with more people by offering content like this podcast. And what I know from like marketing type research that, you know, things like podcasts are really a very effective way of developing what they call like a parasocial relationship. So it's like one-sided in that like, I'm talking right now by myself in my van, and you are listening at some point later in time. And you, especially if you've listened to more than one, it's possible you have formed a sort of imaginary relationship with me. Like, I'm a real person and I say real things. Like, I'm not trying to make any, you know, I'm not trying to manipulate anything, but like, I'm sharing my real thoughts and my real self. But I actually don't know who you are. Like, whoever's, I know who some of you are. Some of you have become my friends, or some of you were already my friends or colleagues, but a bunch of you I've like literally never met and may never meet. And yet you may feel like you have a relationship with me. I've heard people say like, oh, I feel like I can hear your voice in my head when I'm setting a boundary or I'm taking time for myself. And I'm just like, wow, that's amazing. And so like, this is a way of amplifying your impact. It is also a way of doing marketing. So, you know, for those of you who are considering working with me or buying my course or having me speak, a way for you to get to know if I'm the right kind of person for you is to develop this relationship. And therefore, like when you actually do hire me or have me speak or whatever, you'll know what you're getting. And you'll have developed a sense of familiarity and intimacy with me that makes it more likely that you are going to hire me. It's like there's a, I don't know if I've ever said this explicitly, like, but the purpose of this podcast is twofold. Like, first fold is the first thing I said, amplifying the impact. And I really consider this like probably my primary because it's like the largest potentially reaching like way in which I am hoping to contribute to rehumanizing healthcare. And, you know, podcasts, producing this podcast costs my time and therefore money. And I literally have to spend money on like equipment and subscriptions to the podcast places, right? Like a way that I fund that is through the times when people buy my courses, hire me for speaking, hire me to be their coach, right? Like it is also a marketing. It is also marketing my services. That's why it's always got the little blurb at the end. Check out my website. Like it is for that purpose as well. And that's what funds the podcast to continue, right? So it's sort of like a, it gets to be a self-sustaining system. I didn't invent this. Like I actually, you know, found coaches that I hired or like signed up to be certified from through the methodology of podcasts myself. And it's because it's very effective. You get to know someone over time. You get to know someone at your own speed. You're not like in a high pressure sales weird situation. Like you're just like listening and you're getting benefit. And then you think, gosh, I like this person. I trust this person. I feel like I know this person. So now actually, oh, now they're offering me something that I have to pay for. I'm more likely to consider it. Like that happened to me. And I quite enjoyed that process because I feel like I could like trust the people that I ended up giving some of my money and time and energy to. So I've replicated that through this podcast, right? So this is like a well-known strategy, if you will, to connect with people where you don't have to go out and like shake everyone's hand and meet them all. And it's interesting to think about applying that over to healthcare, right? Like what if, you know, someone who likes this sort of thing made a little mini podcast or YouTube video or Instagram live or something for their patients as a way for their patients to get to know them. And I think we think like, oh no, that means they'll want to see me more. Maybe not though. Like what you could be marketing is like, here are the ways in which you can access care, which include me and other people. In fact, yeah, I'll use this as the segue to like talking about my virtual town halls. After I'd done all of this sort of work and experienced these kind of marketing strategies, like through like my coaching training, including like email newsletters and being on social media and like that sort of thing, I considered how little marketing I do within my primary care practice. And I think we don't need it because I'm not open for new patients. I don't need more business. No, thank you. I'm like happy with what I have now. But there's a different kind of marketing, which is not about like, hey, new people come here. It's about like educating your current audience, in my case, my like current patient population on things that I think will be helpful for them to know, both for them and for me, right? So policies of the office, you know, making like, are they aware that we have a policy to not be abusive to our staff? Like we do a kind of marketing. We put posters up. We don't think of that as marketing, but that's like a kind of marketing. It's a kind of education for our patients. And so I started to think like, is there a way I could be communicating with my patients en masse? So I'm not just repeating the same things in many encounters. Like something I noticed I was having to repeat a lot is like, did you know that our office has like an after hours clinic? So, cause people would say I couldn't see you or it was after hours. So I went to a walk-in clinic, which like, is fine, but then I don't get the notes. And by the way, like, you know, once every 28 days, I'm sitting there waiting for other people to come see me. Did you know you can come see someone like me and actually then we'll share the notes with each other and they'll have access to your records and it will be like within our system, right? So like, I was repeating that all the time to people, even though we have posters up and everything. Is there another way that I could continue to remind them that we have to have after hours? Many people, even though it's been many years, still aren't aware that I have a patient portal. Many people, though it's been many years, aren't aware that my clinic has a website, right? Like it takes a long time. Like that's something for marketing, depending on which quote you like I think there's different studies and probably different kinds of marketing are different, but it can take like 7 to 12 times repeating the same information for someone to actually clock it. Like you could hear, that's why you get blasted with ads in every direction about the new, whatever, soda drink or something. Like they know that just seeing a poster once isn't enough for you to actually clock the information. And so they are going to be showing you and exposing you through many, many ways so that you really get the information that the new soda drink is the best thing and you should buy it or whatever. We can do that with our patients. And so one method that I've used to do that is I've started doing these virtual town halls over Zoom. So I use like the Zoom webinar format. So it's like anonymous. So people can't see the other people who are in the room with me, just to preserve anonymity so that, you know, people don't know if each other are my patients, if they would prefer not to share that, right? I don't do them all the time. It would be neat to step up the frequency as I feel my capacity would allow, but for now it's feeling good, which is every like 3 to 6 months. Like I've done a total of maybe, I've done 3 or 4, I can't remember. I think I've done 3. And so I'll like email out to my patients ahead of time. A relatively small number attends live. Like I think the highest attendance I had was maybe 20 people, and I have like over 1,000 patients. But then also I record it and I put it on our clinic website and I sort of promote it in emails after. And I know based on just like patient feedback that many more patients like watch it afterwards. They tell me that they appreciate it. And I feel like it's interesting. Like it has information in it. So then I always see that a bunch of people sign up for my patient portal after we do this. And more people start using online booking after I do it. So I see some of those, you could say, measurable impacts. Like, oh, people clearly watched and they got the information and they found what they needed to find to access those other things. That's great. But also there's the relational piece where like part of what I share on the town hall are like personal updates, not in an oversharing way that doesn't feel right to me, but like when my husband was sick, I shared an update that included the fact that I'd hired some nurse practitioners to see patients so that I could cut back some of my hours. And I shared the new schedule. And I shared that the reasoning why I was doing it was in part because my husband was going through a serious like medical illness. And that's all I shared. I didn't share more than that. And then in my follow-up that I did, I think a year later, it was sort of a repeat of the information. Here's the update of who's working with me. Here's my schedule. Actually my husband had cancer. I actually used it as a teaching point to talk about the concept you hear me talk about all the time. I gave them a mini version of my capacity workshop, actually, where I said, that's why I'm actually quite committed to always working under my capacity and to being replaceable and to still finding ways to offer you as much care as I can without compromising my own self. And that includes through these team members. Like you can see, it's almost a way of selling to my practice, like, and shifting and offering them the opportunity to shift their thinking where they think they only have to see me. I am marketing to them, offering to them, educating them that what if there's another way that they could still get care with, that they don't have to wait for a singular person for, you know? So, I found that very satisfying to do. I'm planning one soon. It's been a while and I'm planning one that's going to be around like flu shots and mammogram, age cutoff changes. And the fact that I'm taking on learners now, like I already kind of have in my head a bunch of the components that's going to be a part of it. And I'm really looking, I want that to continue. I think that's a really helpful way for my patients to, like, I dedicate, you know, an hour of my time doing it live. I maybe dedicate another hour, like, preparing for it. And then maybe 30 minutes after, like, uploading it and posting it and sending out an email about it, right? Like, maybe it's a total of 2.5 or 3 hours versus, like, if I try to tell every single one of my patients live, when they're even in for another thing, all of the things that I cover in that 1 hour talk, like I couldn't do it. So I amplify my impact towards my patient practice, both in terms of offering them education of things that I think are helpful, but also like education on like that I'm a human. Like I get to put a lot into it, which are things I wish my patients would know. And they also get, so they get that information. That's a benefit. And they get to know me and they get FaceTime with me, even though it's asynchronous FaceTime, and a sense of connection to me. And I like truly feel that connection. Like it touches me every time someone asks me how my husband's doing. And I shared, like, in real time, I think I shared that my husband was sick maybe with like two people, like two of my patients, very, very rare, very specific circumstances. Otherwise, I wasn't sharing it at all. And the only way I shared it was through these town halls. I haven't sent out a specific email about it. So the number of patients that have been like, how's your husband? How are you doing? Are you guys okay? Is everyone healthy now? It touches me every time. And that I didn't do it so that I could get that as a benefit, but what a fabulous like side effect benefit that clearly they feel more connected to me. They see me as more human and they're reaching out to me, you know? I guess a mini version of how I do that as well is I always have pictures of my kids up in my rooms. And that's another mini kind of like marketing thing of like, hey, I'm a human. So I'm just thinking, I'm like giving you all the ways that I do it, right? So, oh, and then the last way I do that sort of that information, me sharing information out like that, is that I have an email newsletter. For a long time, we were doing like mass emails through our EMR, but then our EMR made it way, way harder to do that because we switched to a Gmail and it was like a whole thing and like batch emailing. You could only do like, I don't know, 10 at a time for per 24 hours. It's more than that. But like it would take days for our staff to actually send out a mass email and like that wasn't going to work. So I switched to MailChimp, not sponsored. Just that's the one I was aware of because it's speaking of marketing, it was on all those podcasts. So I switched to like an email mass email marketing provider that I was familiar with because I'd used it for like other projects, and uploaded my patients' like emails into it. And at least once a season, I've sent out like a newsletter update, and it'll include this a lot of the same information that I said in the webinars. Like after hours, I always include website. I always include like things that like patients can't hear enough because they will forget. And there are ways that they can access care beyond calling and asking for an appointment. I am constantly wanting my patients to know. Of course, you can call for an appointment, but that's really a bottleneck in our system. And it's like, here's all the other ways you can get an appointment with me, that you can still access me. Patient portal. I say that a lot. I'm always repeating that one. And so that is another method that kind of goes with the town hall. Those are methods that I use as like asynchronous, one effort out and many impacts in, sharing that with patients. So that's like the first thing. The second thing is the patient portal itself. So I've used the same one for many years, like pre-pandemic I was using it. And I'm glad that I like started using it pre-pandemic and kind of, I was very gradual about like telling patients and like I got more familiar with it. I figured out what kind of boundaries I needed to set around it. The one I use is through Think Research and it's called Virtual Care, which is the worst name because it's so vague and confusing. And you also can do like audio and video calls through it, but I don't. I only use the chat function, which is like a way that like once either myself or the patient like requests a chat with the other one, and then the other person at like a later time and date accepts it, then we can start like messaging with each other. And I don't do it live. Like it's a coincidence if the person happens to be at their computer or phone when I happen to be checking it. It acts more as like an email inbox. So though it looks, you know, I'm showing with my hands as if you can see me, but I'm driving. But like it the interface looks like a messenger chat where like my words are on one side of the scrolling screen and the patient's words are on the other side of the screen in little bubbles, you know, like that. And they can attach photos, that sort of thing. And so it's a way that patients can initiate contact with me. But I like it because it still allows boundaries around it. So just because I've initiated contact doesn't mean I'm going to see it right away. And I make that very, very clear every single time I tell someone about it. And if, like, I've had people being like, I have an emergency, Dr. Shan. And, like, when I see it 2 days later, I'm like, please don't use that for this. Like, I just, like, reinforce it and let them know where they should use it instead. It also lets me, like, completely turn off the ability to send new messages in on weekends or, like, actually any in, like, vacations. I can just set when it's out of office and it will block patients from being able to message me at all, which I think is great. And I've just really gradually built it up over time. So my patients that use it, like, if it's the first or second time they use it, they may try to get confused or they may use it for something that it's not an ideal purpose. But, like, then I just guide them and educate them on where that's better, like, routed. If it's an emergency or if it's something that's like not my work to do, I redirect them to somewhere else. But I still use it a ton. It's a way that people can do like simple prescription renewals where really they just need to like, you know, send me a screenshot of their blood pressures at home, or we do some simple blood work and I ask them how they're feeling and they tell me, or they, you know, tell me about their mental health, like whatever it is. So I can still have a more meaningful interaction than if they just do like the pharmacy send in. But it doesn't need an in-person appointment, which those are like, you know, that's premium real estate. I can do it on my own time. I have time that I set specifically like only on my clinic days. So for me, that's Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. Those are the only days I check it. I check it at least once a day. That's my like baseline. And so if I check it once a day on those days, I've done my job. If I have the time and capacity, I do attempt to really check it twice most of the time. But if I've checked it once, then it's like, it's done. Like, and that's like my inbox boundary around that. And so patients know, they may not get an answer for several days, just like it would be for, well, it's what it should be for emails. I feel like people email as if they're texting each other. It's wild to me, but like I use it in that way. So, you know, faster than snail mail, but a slow paced communication back and forth. And I mean, that has so many benefits. So the patient gets to express their concern to me at the time that they're feeling stressed, right? And they get to write out as much as they want about it. And share all their concerns with me. Sometimes it will be that 2 days later I'm reading it and I'm like, hey, so thank you so much for sharing this with me. And like when I'm reading it, I'm reading a history that is likely a transient illness. And so then instead of like trying to write back something from 2 days ago, I actually just ask like, so how are you feeling today? And I see if they answer me on that day or the next day. And like the number of times they're like, I actually feel way better, thanks. Yay! And like when I first did the patient portal, I was paid directly because it was like a pilot project. I was like paid per message. And it was just like, I don't know, $3 per conversation because it's in basket. It's a whole OHIP thing. But like still, it was like a couple hundred extra dollars. And I'm efficient in how I answer them. And it's like, I am paid for it. Hooray. There was a period of time where I was not paid for it when they like cut that pilot project off, but I am paid for it again because now there's a secure messaging like project through OHIP, which is the billing company, the government billing branch that is how I receive my income in Ontario. And so I'm again being paid. I think it ends up being, I don't actually know. I got to look at my remittance statement and see, am I actually getting paid for it yet? But I'm doing the little billings for it. So I'm going to check if I'm getting paid. So even in the meantime, when I wasn't being paid financially, I was being paid in less work. I was being paid in more spots for patients who actually needed to be seen. I was being paid in not having the frustration of someone coming in specifically because they want a physio note. Please, dear God, no. Or a sick note. Oh, I hate it. I hate them. So like I could change my thinking about why I hate them for sure, but also I could just offer patients another way that they can ask for those things. And I feel like I'm being paid in not having to do the work in a way where I feel like it's a waste, you know? I've conducted whole encounters and offered like a whole episodic care, like someone going through a miscarriage, someone going like requesting an abortion. I've actually done those completely by messenger and, you know, sending for the right tests, offering them to come in if they wanted, of course, but those things, you know, there's some time sensitivity to them by the time they come see me, like this way that there's, it's timely. It's still boundary because it's great depending on when I'm viewing it, but I've been able to manage like whole situations like that completely over messenger, which was the patient's preference as well. I always offer them, you know, do you want an appointment as well? But like, and some patients are like, yes, I really want to talk to you. But lots of them don't want to necessarily talk to me. They want to connect with me in this way. And we're able to still foster that connection and communication, even though we haven't spoken to each other in real time. It's very effective. Like, I really enjoy it. One piece I would love to pilot, I don't know if anyone's doing this, but something I've thought about, and I think it wouldn't be for everyone, it would be kind of for a subset of patients when I think it would be beneficial, and I would have the ability to like turn it on and off But something I've noticed that's one of my favorite, it's no, it is my favorite way of doing asynchronous communication in my personal life is through voice memos. I think, you know, obviously I like to gab. I like a chat. I'm doing it right now with all of you. This is my voice memo to everyone who listens to this podcast. I love using like apps like Voxer or even just like voice memos over Slack or voice memos over text. You know, you can use voice memos in all these ways. Because I don't like writing that much. I'd rather just speak it out and you get the whole tone of it. You get the person's emotion. You get the person's, you really get a sense of intimacy. Like I have friendships where I have actually never met them in person, or I've only met them maybe once or twice because we live far away from each other. But I feel so close to them because we communicate by voice memo. And so I hear their voice and I get to listen to it. I don't have this sense that I need to interrupt them or be paying full attention with my face and my body because they're not even there, right? And then I get to share all of my things back. It's just like a cool, completely different way of having a conversation. And I've really thought it would be cool to do that with some patients, especially say patients where right now they're seeing me monthly for like a mental health mini therapy counseling kind of appointment. And I have this idea that maybe they wouldn't even need to see me at all, or would I could less frequently see them if instead we could have access this way and it could be more point of care, you know, and obviously used judiciously, not used for everyone, not to be used for someone to be like, help, I'm suicidal or etc. But like for people where it's more like, people who are not at that state of unwellness, but more like working through their anxiety, or because I do kind of mini psychotherapy sessions with some of my patients, and I'm like curious if I could do that over this format in a way that even feels more wraparound supportive. Because I do that like with coaching clients. I have coaching clients where the we don't meet live. The only way that I am coaching them is through Voxer, right? So like I know it works already, and it would be cool to do that with patients, but it would have to be a medically graded privacy thing. I haven't looked into it, but that's something for the future. And in the meantime, I enjoy the patient portal way of like writing to them. And so all of these are examples of this like asynchronous connection, asynchronous communication, right? And I just think there's something to it. I know people can feel like, oh, it's another inbox, it's another thing. So that's where I think probably it makes sense to first, like you free up the space, you actually remember that you love seeing patients, you get some energy back, and then you think about like, yet you're away from your patients enough that you actually miss them and you have your sense of your humanity back. And then you can start thinking innovatively of like, so I don't want to see more patients in real time, but like now I do have a bit of energy and how could I amplify my impact? Like, I think probably that's going to be the way it works for most people. Otherwise it will just feel like another thing that's draining you and overwhelming you. And definitely my patient portal, certain points during the pandemic, people, there were so many requests pouring in and there was so little connection and I was not in a place that I knew how to set boundaries and stuff, like where it was overwhelming and I was staying up really late trying to answer back. Like, but that was like a wild time, right? So there's a way you can use any of these things I'm describing and it won't reduce your stress and it won't increase your sense of connection if you're not connected with yourself first. So I think all of these, I would suggest you consider after first establishing what you need to establish, like boundaries around work, so that you have a connection with yourself. Then you'll know which of these feels genuine for you to offer or something completely different. If you are offering something completely different, I would love to know, like, do you have a YouTube channel for your patients? Or like, what are you doing? I know some clinics have like a social media page or like a Facebook page, like that kind of stuff is interesting. And again, it's just this asynchronous way of still fostering a sense of community and connection that, you know, other industries have, you know, already established for us is an effective method for people to feel connected. Like you have a personal connection to either Coke or Pepsi, probably, right? Or McDonald's or Wendy's, like, or at least I certainly do. And that's like because of marketing. It's not because I've ever met a Pepsi. Like, what does that even mean? But like, so you can use that stuff for those purposes. We could still use some of those methods in a way that's, you know, aligned with our values and for the benefit of ourselves and our patients to feel connected to us. That's therapeutic. That's beneficial, right? And also means they're less likely to like dehumanize us. Like there's like so many benefits, right? And so that brings me to my third strategy that I cannot report if it's going to be beneficial or not, because it is my newest experiment that is not even out yet at the time of recording this. We are like in the midst of actually recording the audio that's going to be turned into these episodes. And so that's for my new podcast that at the time of release, I think it will have already come out, because it's meant to come out in October. And it's going to be called Experiential Anatomy. And like I said at the top, so this is a podcast. Yes, it is for people in healthcare, including like, so it's not just my podcast. It's co-created between myself and my now good friend, as well as embodiment coach, Jamie Lee Finch. And she actually really represents and is from the like alternative medicine world. Like she is a licensed massage therapist, and like really enjoys and partakes in and explores and believes in, non-allopathic forms of healthcare. And it's not that she doesn't believe in allopathic forms of healthcare, but she's actually, she says on the podcast, going through a time where she's intentionally like not interacting with allopathic. Allopathic is the kind I do, just if you've never heard that term. It's like, instead of saying Western and Eastern, because that's very reductive and not super accurate, depending on where you're standing on the globe, like saying allopathic is sort of the kind I do, medicine that traditional, not historically traditional, but modern medicine, like, you know, allopathic is a term that kind of describes what I do. She is like, she doesn't have a family doctor, et cetera, right? So like, we are coming from different spaces that both call themselves healthcare and that people consider healthcare and partake in, like different people do. And some people do both and some people do one versus the other. So it's already broadening the scope that way. Though I'm also aware that like, I know I've, a few naturopaths have reached out and said they listen to my podcast. So this podcast is also for you, of course, but like that's, I apologize, but I don't always picture you when I think about healthcare because I am in the allopathic world. But also the Experiential Anatomy podcast, I'm doing it, putting in the extra energy of creating it in hopes that I can share it with my patients as well, which is interesting because like I'm planning on sharing personal details on it. I don't know exactly which ones, but I'm planning on being my full self on that podcast, talking about my experiences with my body. So it's interesting to think of sharing those with my patients, but like, I also, that feels integrity with me to like share out of my experience with my body. Actually, I do it more and more with my patients, even like real time now, not in a way that feels like an overshare, but in like a connective, validating way to describe. Like a specific example is like, before I insert an IUD, especially if people are fearful, I will often share the anecdote that I have both experienced an IUD insertion as well as two childbirths without like pain medication. And I always say, guess which one hurts worse? And sometimes they guess that the IUD hurts worse. And I'm like, no, the IUD was uncomfortable and had moments of pain. And childbirth hurt way worse, especially like teens or like young people. I'm just demonstrating for them not to minimize their pain experience with the IUD, but to put in perspective some of the reasoning why many of them are getting an IUD, which is to avoid having a baby. And so just putting in perspective that there are other pain experiences that were more intense for me. So I share that. Therefore, that means I'm sharing with multiple patients that I've had an IUD in my body and that I've pushed two babies out of my body. You know, like I didn't have to share that or not. So that's a real-time example of how I share about my body anyway. And so in this podcast, Jamie and I are going to be sharing like our lived experience being in bodies, our journeys with discovering and shifting and cultivating our relationship with our bodies, like sharing personal stories, also sharing our personal experiences working with other people with bodies, not in a way where like I'm not never going to share a patient story on there. Of course, that's confidential, but like I can share my experiences of as I have gotten more connected with my body, how that shifted, how I connect to my patients, how I even sometimes sort of ask my body what she thinks is happening, not out loud, but in my head in rooms and have been interested in what kind of pops up when I use that reflective method to uncover what might be happening. It's an interesting method. Talk about a lot of different topics. Like our second season, we're planning on talking about death and death experiences. We want to talk about sort of the different definitions that we have for health and which seem actually body supported and not. Like we have so many things planned that are possible with the podcast. And the reason I am saying that I'm considering it a potential asynchronous way to connect with my patients is twofold. So one is, like I just said, you know, if they choose to listen, they will hear even more about who I am as a human. And I know we have this, like, we've been trained to think like it's not professional to share personal details with our patients. And I still agree that there is a way, professional is a tricky word, but a way in which we're crossing boundaries and kind of blurring the lines of the roles we hold that aren't productive, that aren't generative, that could be potentially harmful to our ability to hold good space for our patients. I think there's absolutely a way to overshare, to make it about us in a way that's like not beneficial for anyone. And I think that still remembering, sorry, I'm at a garage now. I also think that we overemphasize that and think that we can't tell anyone anything about us. And it's fine if people want to do that. Everyone gets to set their own boundary about what they keep personal and not, like, absolutely. But the sort of experiment I'm working through and embodying is like, what if really connecting through my humanity to my patients is beneficial, not only in that it sort of is a good shortcut to trust and intimacy with me, and therefore makes our communications more effective because they know the person that they're talking to better, even if we haven't spent a ton of time together. That's one. But also, like, they understand what I'm about, and I can teach a lot of what we do in real time with our patients is teaching and education. And real time, short form, in the midst of doing five other things, is not necessarily the most effective form of education. It's certainly not the only form. Like I said before, the marketing thing, like, people need to hear a concept many times before it really sinks in. That's true in marketing. Therefore, it's true in education, because those are two words for the same thing, right? So what if my patients, through the portal of getting to know me and Jamie and our guests and what we talk about, in a space that's speaking of their own bodies in a different way, in a way that I believe is more true, is aligned with science, what science says is true about our bodies, but said in a way that engenders a sense of trust and connection with their own bodies. I have a hypothesis that will change the work I get. I have a hypothesis that some of my patients who say really struggle with illness, anxiety, and fear of their bodies and fear of illness and mistrust of their bodies, that through a portal like this podcast, that it could help them with that. I think it could be really therapeutic for especially folks with illness, anxiety, health anxiety, but also everyone. Like, I think a lot of what I try and do, especially these days, is with my patients, that is, I can feel its benefit, is not only what I communicate about their body, but how I communicate it. And I really have an ethic of trying my best to never use language that makes them more, not makes them, but like that offers them the opportunity to be more fearful or distant or disconnected to their body, or fixing kind of language or objectifying kind of language. I am attempting, and I'm in a practice, I'm no perfection here, but like I'm practicing speaking about their body in positive ways, knowing that that changes their experience of their body. It even changes their experience of their symptoms. Depending on how you speak of pain changes your experience of pain. If you remember a couple of talks I've had, the episodes I've had of this podcast with Deb Malkin, who's a chronic pain coach, like there's real science behind this, right? So like, this podcast is my biggest, newest thing that I'm hoping could potentially be asynchronous connection. Not only with my own patients, though that's cool. That's like, oh, and that's my doctor. And so I will see her. And like, I'm curious. I have no idea. It could backfire in some cases. It often does in some cases. That's just how it goes. It's always a mixed bag. But like even patients, people who will never be my patients, could they get a benefit? Could this be another way I help healthcare in part by like helping people not need healthcare or not think they need healthcare, but instead some of what may be needed is a shift of understanding of their symptoms, right? Like that is part of it, right? So that's my last one. So the reason I shared all that with you was, like I said, I feel like I need to repeat this, speaking of repeating things for letting them sink in, was not because I think you, whatever work you do in healthcare, that you need to do any of these specific things. Especially if you're a family doctor like me and you're like, oh gosh, like, no, we get to all practice differently. We get to practice in a way that's aligned with our values and that's consistent with our capacity and that we want to do and that feels good to us, period. Maybe you are inspired to do some of these things. You're like, ooh, I actually, that would be kind of fun. I do have capacity for that. And so I hope it is inspiring to you if that's what you want to take from it. And no matter what, I think what I mostly wanted to illustrate is what happens when we think beyond the confines of what the healthcare system says it has to be now. That's why I loved having the conversation about like healthcare futurism to begin with, was not because I think that Zaina had all the answers. She wouldn't say she had all the answers at all either, right? She's sort of just reading the tea leaves and looking at the weather patterns, if you will, of like the winds of change and sharing the reality that she sees is already happened and continuing to happen so that we can make informed choices on how we participate in it. And then, yeah. So then how do, then like my last question is like, how do you want to participate in it? Right? Like, what is it that you want to make your bets on? If you have just like one little smidge of extra energy, or even if you have no energy, you know, you have to cut back, do that first. And then once you have a little energy, what's a bet you want to make about a direction you want healthcare to shift into? And what are the essential pieces for you? Is yours connection like mine, or is it actually information? Like, are you really passionate about like sharing with your patients about a certain topic, and you notice you're repeating yourself and have your handouts and you wish you could amplify so everyone knew this really cool piece of information about whatever that you often want to spend time repeating? Could you be amplifying your impact in a way that's burning you out less, right? Through some of the methods that I talked about, or other methods too. I see a lot more like physicians and other clinicians online, like talking about menopause or ADHD or allergies, like kind of that's public facing stuff. I think that stuff's so cool. And like, so what feels possible for you, right? It could be some of that outward facing stuff. It could be simply like, I'm so sick of no one in my practice ever knowing blah. Well, what would happen if you can even develop sort of automated emails. So it's like once a month, it's actually just the same email reminder. Here's the new number reminder. We are at this new address, like whatever it is that you wish you didn't have to tell your patients repeatedly one-on-one. How can you amplify that marketing, right? Like maybe it's that. So like lots of ideas on this one, lots of ways you could go with it. Not meant to overwhelm, always a menu, and you can just close the menu and take nothing, or you can take little bits. It's totally up to you. And I'm here cheering for you through all of it. My hope is that by sharing some of what I'm doing, you know, you're not alone in whatever it is that you're doing. And if you're interested, you could also listen to Experiential Anatomy. We would love to have you over there listening to that as well. And that's it. I've arrived at my destination. So I'm going to go in and give a talk after talking for 50 minutes. Actually, I have 30 minutes to be silent and drink some tea and get a snack, hopefully, before my talk starts. I'm going to go do that. And sending my love out to you all, healthcare humans. Thanks as always for listening.
I would love to take this work deeper with you. Visit joanchanmd.com today and discover my growing menu of options for restorative medical education to suit your learning needs. I offer one-on-one coaching, customized workshops, and self-study courses that allow you to connect not only with my work on a deeper level, but also with other healthcare humans just like you. So if you want to start humanizing your work in healthcare to a deeper level and do it in community with others, please visit joanchanmd.com and find those options and what fits you and your life today.